right, we got a lot of different things coming at you today, okay? And I'm just sensing a little bit of a lull right now. That. We don't got time for that. All right, let's go. Crank it, Glenn Cross. Woo!
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
You're listening to Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Springer on FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Depend on it.
Hey, what's going on? Welcome in to a Friday edition of Rock Chalk Sports Talk. Here on FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN, I'm Nick Springer. A lot to get to on today's show, and not a lot of time to get to it either. We're going to be out a little bit early, 45 minutes early, actually, at 5:15, switching over to pregame coverage and then broadcast coverage of the KU women's basketball team at the Big 12 tournament at the T-Mobile Center in Kansas City. The women taking on BYU at 5:30. In the 7-10 matchup of the Big 12 tournament. We'll dive a little deeper into that coming up later on in the show. Got a lot of audio to get to today as well, including from senior Tyana Jackson from the KU women's team, Brandon Schneider, head coach for the KU women's team, and also Bill Self as well, previewing Houston, which is coming up tomorrow. So a lot to get to, not a lot of time to get to it. RCSD, as always, is brought to you by 23rd Street Brewery. So off the top here, let's dive into KU taking on Houston on the men's side. This is the regular season finale for Kansas and for Houston before the Big 12 tournament on the men's side starts next week. And for Kansas, this is a very significant game for them, even though they are eliminated from the chance of winning the Big 12 regular season title. They are still battling for a shot potentially at a top four finish in the Big 12, which would earn them a double bye in the Big 12 tournament and foregoing them having to play an extra game. Right now, where they sit as the 5 seed, they would have to play on Wednesday. But a win against Houston and a loss for Texas Tech against Baylor would ensure that KU would at that point be a 4 seed and then would not have to play until Thursday. So still plenty to play for Kansas in this game coming up against Houston. Houston, of course, clinched a share of the Big 12 title earlier in the week with their win against UCF, but a win for the Cougars against KU would give them the Big 12 title in the regular season outright. They could also get it with Iowa State losing to Kansas State, which that game tips off earlier in the day tomorrow at 1 o'clock, KU and Houston at 3 o'clock. So it could end up being the case that Houston, by the time you get to like the under 16 timeout of the KU game, they may know that they are going to be the outright champions if Iowa State were to lose. But still, plenty to play for both teams, I think, here in this game between KU and Houston. Before we fully dive into that, I did want to make note of something else. Yesterday, Liam McNeely, who was one of the top five recruits in the class of 2024 for the men's basketball side, he was down to Indiana, KU, and I think Auburn was his other his top three, if I'm not mistaken. He had committed to Indiana. He decommitted from Indiana yesterday, and so KU was a team that pursued him very aggressively. He's a 6'8", 6'9", perimeter shooter, can shoot the ball very well, and certainly an intriguing prospect and a guy that KU fans might want to keep their eye on here as he decommitted from Indiana yesterday. So I want to mention that. We'll follow up on that if anything else happens in favor of KU at any point with Liam McNeely, but just wanted to get that in. So, yeah, KU does take on Houston tomorrow afternoon. 3 o'clock tip right here on KLWN. Pregame coverage will start at 1:30 for a 3 o'clock tip for the Jayhawks and the Cougars to end the regular season right here on KLWN. One quick note on tomorrow's broadcast coverage for the KU men. If the KU women win this afternoon against BYU, they would be playing at 5:30 tomorrow against Texas. And if that does happen, we'll be switching over to KU women's basketball coverage at the conclusion of the men's game. So you hear the entirety of the men's broadcast, but if you're looking for the men's post-game coverage, you may have to head to our sister station on 105.9 KISS. If the KU women are playing at 5:30, we'll be switching over to that here on KLWN. So Houston has won 8 straight games since losing to KU at Allen Fieldhouse earlier in the season, back on February 3rd. So they haven't lost in over a month. The last loss coming to Kansas in Allen Fieldhouse. And that was the game in which Kansas played the best game of their season, really. Shot 70% from the floor and really, really kind of took it to Houston in a lot of ways. They end up winning that game by 13 points, 78-65. And the thing for Houston, though, is in a lot of ways, that performance for Houston was just a blip in the radar. I mean, they have been pretty much great defensively. In fact, you take away that loss to Kansas, or since that loss to Kansas, I guess, in the last month and this as part of this 8-game winning streak, they have given up 63 points, 62 points, 61 points, 65 points, 59 points. They did, against Oklahoma, interestingly enough, Oklahoma put up 85 on them on the road. Or I should say when they were on the road at Oklahoma. And then 59 against UCF. They also gave up 76 against Baylor in overtime in that game. So, you know, you're talking about, as part of this 8-game win streak, 6 games in which their opponent has scored 65 points or less. One of those games was an overtime game as well. So their defense has been incredible. It was like a speed bump the Kansas game, and then they went right back to what they've been doing all season on defense. They obviously have been elite. They've been number one in KenPom for a while. They are number one on defense in KenPom. I think at this point they've been number one on KenPom in defense the whole season. But their offense has also been very, very good as of late as well. They're 12th overall in the country on offense. And in conference-only play, they've been really strong on both sides. Second on offense in the Big 12 in conference-only play, and second on defense in conference-only play. Iowa State actually is better, a little bit better in conference-only play metrically than Houston. But point being is that that loss to Kansas, again, it was like a speed bump. It didn't really seem to slow Houston down at all. They kind of went back to what they've been doing all season, which is physically dominating teams and playing great defense and playing physical defense and winning a lot of those types of games. In their most recent game against UCF, they were actually down at half, and UCF, I think, got up to about an 8-point lead in the second half before Houston figured things out and was able to come back and win that game. And the thing with Houston is, not only are they a physical dominating team, they also have really, really strong elite guards that can flip the switch really at any moment and seemingly help carry them. LJ Cryer ended up with 25 points in the game for Houston against UCF. And I think he had 19 of them came in the second half for him. And Jamal Shedd had 16 as well. I mean, those two guys are the definition of really clutch players for Houston. So not only can they really grind you down, but they do have clutch players that they can go to rely on for when they need to score. So that's going to be a real issue for Kansas. You go back to that game for Kansas at Allen Fieldhouse against Houston. Houston lost their starting big man, Javier Francis, pretty early in the game. He got hurt pretty early, only ended up playing 4 minutes in the game for Houston. And he is healthy now, but Houston has another injury to one of their big men, their freshman, Joseph Tugler, who broke his foot last week. So this is already a Houston team that is not particularly tall in terms of like vertical like height, but they are very physical and they have great length as well. But that didn't really seem to matter against KU. I mean, KU put on an absolute clinic of passing against Houston when they played it out in Fieldhouse. But of course, as we know, KU has a lot of times this game look like two different. A lot of times this season look like two different teams for when they're playing it out in Fieldhouse versus playing on the road. So we'll see if KU can carry that over into this game against Houston. But yeah, so Houston, again, they're going to be down. They'll be down one of their big men, Tugler, who's actually, I think, is out for the season with that broken foot. So he won't be back at all for them, even when they make their NCAA tournament run as well. And Tugler, when KU played at Allen against Houston, he played 34 minutes and was second on the team in rebounds with 8. But now they have Francis as well, who is back after, again, he got hurt pretty early. And again, Tugler listed at 6'7", and Francis is listed at 6'8". But he's basically their tallest guy that they're going to start, Francis. So we'll see how that plays out for this game, this particular game, on the road for KU against Houston. And again, that game was KU's best of the season by far in Allen Fieldhouse, shooting almost 70%. But Houston it didn't really affect much for Houston. They just went back to doing their thing. So they've been pretty impressive. and Houston can win this conference outright by beating KU. Obviously, if you're Houston, you don't want to get swept by KU. And as we all know, teams will be even more jacked up to play KU than they already are. So it's senior day for Houston. They have a chance to split with Kansas, win the Big 12 title outright in their first year in the conference. They're going to be jacked up for sure. And Kansas, on the flip side, we've seen them at times play kind of to the level of their opponents and play to the level maybe of the environment a little bit in some cases. So I'll be curious to see what that looks like in this game against Houston. Because, again, Houston has two really, really strong guards. LJ Cryer, if you remember right, back to that Houston game they played at Allen Fieldhouse, he really, really went off in the second half for Houston. Ended up making 6 of 12 three-point shots and was really impressive because Shedd, that was kind of an off game for Shedd. He only had 7 points in that first matchup against KU at 2 of 9 from the floor. And so, again, you look back to that K-State game that KU played earlier in the week, and what happened? A smaller guard. Shedd is listed at 6'1", so not small, but DeJuan Harris, I would think, probably is equal to him a little bit in size. But a smaller guard than Tyler Perry got absolutely locked up by DeJuan Harris. And Kansas's defense really schemed to take him away. And you look back at this game with that Houston played against Kansas, same deal. Jamal Shedd struggled, 2 of 9. The problem is you only have one DeJuan Harris, and you got Shedd and you got LJ Cryer to deal with if you're with Houston. And Cryer had a big game, and he's coming off of a big game as well against UCF. So I'll be curious to see how Kansas handles that matchup, because Cryer really did go off and keep Houston within touching distance of Kansas when they played in Allen Fieldhouse. Kansas had a 15-point lead at the half, and Houston actually outscored Kansas in the second half in large part due to Cryer. So you got to keep an eye on him, and probably especially in the second half, find a way to not let him take over. He almost does, in some ways, fit into the same category as Tyler Perry for Kansas State, where it's you don't want this guy taking over the game. But then the issue with compared between Houston and Kansas State is that Houston is then just significantly better around Cryer in all areas, really, than what Kansas State had to offer besides Perry. So it's obviously not as easy of a scheme to come up with. And then for Kansas, you still have questions about Kevin McCullough. Bill Self talked about it yesterday. We'll get to his audio coming up in the 4 o'clock hour later on in the show with what he had to say about Kevin McCullough. And it's kind of more the same, which is, yeah, you know, it's at any moment he could kind of retweak it, which doesn't exactly inspire a lot of confidence. And he definitely tweaked it, I think, again against Kansas State. Ultimately, he came out of the game with like 6 minutes left and didn't go back in. So there's definitely some real legit concern there about what his status is going to be. And, you know, this is already a tall enough task as it is for KU going on the road against Houston. Houston undefeated at home this season. If Kevin McCullough is not sharp, you have a hard time kind of painting a picture that KU can win. Because Kevin McCullough in that game at Allen Fieldhouse was 7 of 8 from the floor, 1 of 2 from 3, 17 points, 7 rebounds. He was great. He was really great. Furphy also had a huge game in that game as well for KU when he was 6 of 7 with 3 of 4 from 3. So you get the sense you're going to need Kevin McCullough to show up and probably play at a semi-high level, really, for Kansas to have a realistic chance in a game like this. And you're going to need some great passing from KU. That I thought that was really the big difference going back to that first matchup with Houston. It was the passing from KU that really, really made the difference in the game. The passing and cutting from KU at the level that they were able to do it at was definitely what's most important. And that kind of leads into this point of, just how important is this game for KU? I mentioned they're obviously out of contention for the Big 12 regular season title, but a win for KU in this game against Houston, it keeps them alive for that possible top four seed against or heading into the Big 12 tournament, which would mean that they would have to play one less game, basically. They wouldn't have to play on Wednesday, just play on Thursday, getting a double bye. That is obviously significant. And even Brian Haney, voice of the Jayhawks, was on this on the show yesterday saying, maybe you go all in on this game against Houston and try to see if you can get that double bye. And then on top of that, maybe you start to think about resting a Kevin McCullough or something, even when you get to the Big 12 tournament. In fact, Shrey Islada asked Bill Self a question about resting Kevin McCullough in the Big 12 tournament. And Bill Self, he didn't deflect it, but he I think he answered honestly when he said, I don't know. You know, that's something they'd have to evaluate next week probably. But obviously not having to play on Wednesday would be very significant for KU. So again, it's almost, do you throw all your eggs into this basket against Houston and see if you can hopefully get that and then get that double bye and then in the Big 12 tournament just kind of coast a little bit. I don't know. But in terms of importance, I think this is one of those classic games where it's hard to determine the importance until maybe after, because if you win, it's like, oh, that game was very important, you know, on the road against the number one team, extremely important game. But if you lose, okay, it wasn't that important. You weren't playing for a Big 12 title. You needed to go. You needed to, you know, you've got guys banged up. So it's kind of a funny way. That's kind of how I'm viewing it. It's like, depending on it, almost the importance that we put on this game or that I put on this game will basically depend on the outcome, right? If you win, very important. You know, you went on the road and beat a top team that had not lost on the road. They're going to be a one seed. At that point, if you're Kansas, you would have, what, 4 wins over teams that are going to be one seeds or, you know, the first 2 seed in the case of Tennessee, right? You'd have a sweep of Houston. You'd have beaten UConn, Tennessee, Marquette, who is on that 3 seed line right now as well. So you'd have all these really, really high-quality wins if you're Kansas. But in the grand scheme of things, and I think Bill Self kind of did a good job pointing this out, a win for KU against Houston does not move them to a one seed. And we had that mailbag question earlier in the week, which was, you know, let's say Kansas runs the table here. What can they get? If they're on the table and they win the Big 12 tournament, yes, one seed. Beating Houston in and of itself and sweeping Houston is not, and then, you know, going to the Big 12 tournament and losing and winning one game and losing in, you know, in the quarterfinals or whatever, that's probably not going to get you a one seed. So beating Houston on the road, really, it won't jump your seed line if you're Kansas that much. I guess beating Houston on the road would, to me, all but guarantee KU would get a 2 seed at least. Right now, you know, they could get a 2 seed, they could get a 3 seed. I think the latest bracketology has Kansas on the 3 seed line at the moment. And we're going to talk with Graham Doran of Graham Doran Bracketology coming up in about 20 minutes more about this. But I don't know that Kansas, you know, if they win, are they locked into a 2 seed? Maybe. But this is a game, again, that I think the importance of this game will almost be added, will almost be applied after the fact of, hey, you weren't playing for a Big 12 title. You're banged up. You're just trying to get to the postseason at this point, as healthy as you can be. And Houston hasn't lost at home. You lost. Okay, not important. Who cares? And obviously, if you win, then it's, hey, you went on the road and beat the consensus number one team, really, in the country right now, that hasn't lost at home and is going to be a one seed. And you went on the road and beat them to sweep them for the season. And that would certainly be a big feather in the cap of Kansas. But, again, it's probably going to be a tall task. This is a really, really good Houston team. Obviously, that goes without saying. They have just 3 losses on the year. They've been really strong. Really, really strong all season long. And again, that defense, besides the Kansas game, they've been what they've been all season, which is almost untouchable in some situations. So it's going to be a tall task for Kansas, to say the least, on the road here. All right, as I said, Graham Doran of Graham Doran Bracketology going to join the show coming up in 15 minutes from right now. The 4 o'clock hour is going to be a pretty audio-heavy hour. We're going to get to some Brandon Schneider audio and also some Bill Self audio from earlier yesterday speaking ahead of this game against Houston, and also a little bit of KU women's basketball talk. We're out early at 5:15 for coverage of KU women's basketball at the Big 12 tournament in Kansas City. They'll be taking on BYU in the 7:10 matchup, 5:30 tip, 5:15 pregame. So we're out 5:15 here on Rock Chalk Sports Talk today. We'll get to some KU game picks of that KU-Houston game And more thoughts coming up in the 5 o'clock hour as well. We'll take a timeout. Also had a chance to hear from Tyana Jackson as well, KU women's basketball senior star. We'll get to what she had to say ahead of the Big 12 tournament for the KU women coming up next. You're listening to Rock Chalk Sports Talk on FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Depend on it. Welcome back into Rock Chalk Sports Talk here on FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. And a lot of talk about conference tournaments. Of course, the NCAA tournament coming up with Selection Sunday now a little over a week away. And on Fridays, we are joined by Graham Doran from Graham Doran Bracketology to help break down the latest with the NCAA tournament. You can check out Graham and all of his work on social media at Graham Doran Bracketology. Actually just released a new bracket earlier today. You might want to check out a little bit and see what that's like. So, Graham, appreciate your time as always, man, here. And first off, let's start with, I know last weekend you were in Omaha for the mock committee. What was that experience like, and what was maybe the biggest takeaway from having a chance to talk more about the tournament bracket?
Well, it was an excellent experience in Omaha. We were actually right next to the arena where Creighton plays. There's a really cool sports bar there called Let It Fly, and we got to speak to the Creighton assistant coaches while we were there, kind of do some chatting about their in-game strategy that they were planning to deploy against Marquette. That was really kind of interesting. But the big experience for me was just being there with some of the other top bracketologists around the country and kind of learning a little bit, not just about them, but some more about the way that they see things a little bit differently. And I think that's the key to the committee, ultimately, is this is different personalities, different levels of experience, and people are going to emphasize different things. What really becomes important is who's willing to speak up and convince people, and who's the most influential voices in the room. That matters. So sometimes when we look back and we say, well, why this team over that team? It was so close. It just comes down to who had the most convincing argument when they actually went down to speak about these things.
And for your guys' mock committee, what were a few of the teams where maybe those discussions were the most heated back and forth about putting one team above the other? Were there, you know, three or four or five different teams maybe where those discussions were like that?
Well, the most interesting discussion revolved around Kansas, Baylor, and Iowa State. The mock committee actually kept Kansas above both Baylor and Iowa State, and ended up with that order: Kansas 8th overall, Baylor 9th overall, and Iowa State 10th overall. And the reason why is Kansas's top end wins. They have a neutral court win over Tennessee, a win over Houston at home, and a win over UConn at home. Those three wins really carried a ton of weight for the committee. And I think that things have changed a little bit since the committee got together, because Baylor picked up a home win over Texas. Iowa State picked up a home win over BYU. The Jayhawks maybe were the most impressive of the three teams this week, but they beat Kansas State, which doesn't carry nearly as much weight as beating BYU or Texas would at home. So I think for me, Iowa State has now passed Kansas, and Baylor has passed Kansas as well. I have Baylor as my 7th overall seed, Iowa State as my 8th overall seed, and then at the top of the three line, I have Marquette and Kansas in that order. I think Marquette's head-to-head neutral court win against Kansas could be pivotal.
Yeah, diving deeper into this discussion with Kansas, they've got a big game obviously coming up tomorrow against Houston on the road. Is it safe to say that if Kansas wins that game against Houston, regardless of what they do in the Big 12 tournament coming up in Kansas City, if they win that game against Houston, are they guaranteed a 2 seed, you think, at that point?
I can't imagine a way that they wouldn't have a 2 seed. I would put it this way. In the worst case scenario, Kansas would lose to Houston again in the Big 12 tournament and go 4-1 against number one seeds. That, the worst win percentage they could have against number one seeds in that case would be 800. That sounds like a team that deserves a 2 seed to me. So the way that the Big 12 bracket would set up, there's a decent chance that Kansas actually wouldn't even play Houston until the final. So I think if Kansas is 4-0 against the number one seed line, I just don't understand any way that the committee could deny them a top 2 seed at that point.
Would it matter at all to you think? So let's say if the Big 12 tournament bracket shakes out to a certain way where Kansas's run might include having to play Baylor or Iowa State, if Kansas were to beat Houston but then maybe lose to Baylor or Iowa State in the Big 12 tournament, would that maybe possibly still give Baylor or Iowa State a leg up on KU at that point?
I think it could potentially give Baylor or Iowa State a leg up on Kansas, but Kansas having that road win over Houston and the neutral court win over Tennessee might get it anyways. And even if they didn't have the leg up, I think Kansas would still be a two seed. I think it would speak more to Baylor and Iowa State moving even further up the bracket. I think somebody would have to make way for Kansas at that point, just because they would have way too many quality wins at the very, very top end of the bracket.
I think last week I'd kind of asked you a similar question here, but let's say Kansas loses against Houston and then maybe even loses in their first game of the Big 12 tournament. Well, what do you think maybe the lowest they could fall is? At this point, is it safe to say Kansas is probably going to be a three seed, or could they even fall to a four if they falter in this game against Houston and then lose in the first round of the Big 12 tournament?
Yeah, I think a four seed is possible, but I think it's unlikely. And the reason why is you just look at the teams that I have on my four line. I have Alabama, Illinois, Kentucky, and Auburn. Of course, we know Kansas already beat Kentucky on a neutral court. That could factor in. But Alabama is not strong against quadrant one. They are 4-9 against quad one. Illinois hasn't been that strong either. If you look at Illinois, they're just 5-6 against quadrant one. Kansas, again, already three wins over number one seeds. I don't see any realistic way that Kansas would fall behind those teams when the last chance they have to lose during the regular season is at Houston, which is about as excusable as the loss possibly could be.
Do you feel like the number one seeds right now are kind of locked in? You've got Purdue, Tennessee, Houston, and UConn. Do you feel like those are kind of locked in, or is there any chance for a Baylor, Arizona, or Iowa State to possibly steal one of those, or do you feel pretty confident in what you have right now with the one seeds?
I feel pretty confident in what I have, but Tennessee is the one to watch. I think Purdue, Houston, and UConn are going to end up being number one seeds. Tennessee has a much more vulnerable hold on the one line at this point. So for me, I think Arizona and North Carolina are very serious challengers for that one seed. But I wouldn't rule out any of Baylor, Iowa State, Marquette, Kansas, or Duke. I think all of them still have a path to the one line.
With conference tournaments kicking off and already getting started this weekend and then continuing, obviously, with a lot of the Power Six conferences into next week, what are some conference tournaments that you're going to be maybe keeping the closest eye on here that could shake up possibly some seed lines or the bracket overall?
Well, one of them's going on right now, and that's Arch Madness in St. Louis. Indiana State I currently have as an 11 seed, and I think they're a very serious at-large contender. They looked great today, picking up a win to advance to the semifinals. Drake gets an opportunity to pick up another win tonight, and then potentially a good win in quadrant two against Bradley tomorrow. If Drake and Indiana State play in the final, there's a decent chance that you'll see two teams from the Missouri Valley enter the NCAA tournament. And even if one of those teams gets upset before then, I could see either Indiana State or Drake losing in Missouri Valley final to someone else and still getting into the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, when you think about that Arch Madness, if that does happen where maybe a team does upset Indiana State or Drake and wins that, who do you think that may be most effect on the bubble in terms of possibly knocking some teams out potentially?
Well, there's a few teams that I've really been focused on most recently. One of those is Iowa, actually. Iowa's made a late run towards the NCAA tournament. They've won games recently at Northwestern and at Michigan State. They don't have a great quadrant one record. They're just 3-8 against quadrant one, and even their strength of record is only 46th. But what Iowa does have is three wins away from home against teams in the tournament right now. I already mentioned Northwestern and Michigan State and true road games, but they also beat Seton Hall on a neutral court, and that pairs with home wins over Wisconsin and Nebraska. So I think Iowa is just right on that bubble. Another team that I think is right on the bubble right now is St. John's. They have a sweep of Villanova, and so I think looking at a team that's 4-9 against quadrant one in St. John's, there's not a whole lot of room for error. So I could see St. John's potentially being squeezed out. They play kind of the last game of the season isn't going to be one that really does much for them. It's just a game at home against Georgetown. So not really a chance to improve the resume for St. John's. That's why I think they could be a team that potentially gets squeezed by a Missouri Valley at-large candidate if St. John's weren't going to go far in the Big East tournament.
Well, yeah, when you consider maybe the Power Six specifically, which teams do you think maybe need a run in their conference tournaments to possibly push their way into the bracket, or versus which teams do you think maybe could afford to lose early and still you think would be safe if they're close to the bubble?
Well, I think there's kind of a line of demarcation once you get to my nine line. So let me just go ahead and kind of talk about some of those teams. I think My nine seeds are TCU, Mississippi State, Colorado State, and Oklahoma. I think those are the first of the teams that aren't really safe. You compare that to my eight seeds. They're Northwestern, St. Mary's, Texas, Boise State. I feel confident all of those teams are very likely headed to the NCAA tournament. I don't feel as confident in my nine seeds. So I think those are teams that might need to perform in their conference tournament to end up making the field. But some other teams that are right on the bubble for me are Nebraska, Michigan State, Seton Hall, Iowa, St. John's, and Virginia. I think all of those teams need more wins, because if they lose out, it will not be enough to make the NCAA tournament. And some teams out of the field that I think are really close include Villanova, Colorado, Texas A&M, and Pitt. So that's really kind of where I'm most focused right now, but I am watching Providence, because if Providence can beat UConn at home, they suddenly get right into that field.
You mentioned with your 8 and 9 seeds, you've got Texas as an 8 right now and Oklahoma as a 9. I believe they play each other here to end the season. How important is that game head-to-head between Texas and Oklahoma, and possibly shaking up how those teams could kind of play out in the tournament also?
Yeah, I think it's important for seeding purposes, because Texas could potentially move up to that 7 line. Oklahoma could lock their tournament bid in with a win in Austin, but I think Oklahoma's really not safe at this point. As I mentioned, they're still kind of hanging out there in a kind of precarious position. And what is really troubling Oklahoma at this point isn't metrics or anything like that. They actually have the 23rd strength of record in the country, but they're only 3-9 against quadrant one, and 8 of their games were played in quadrant four. They've done a good job of avoiding bad losses, but if you really look at their wins, it's lighter than you'd expect in the quality win category. So I think Oklahoma is not totally safe, and they've really barely gotten by in a couple of games that they had to win. At Oklahoma State, they hit a long-distance three-pointer to win that one at the buzzer, and then they barely survived Cincinnati at home. Oklahoma, I think, is probably going to do enough to make the tournament, but they are not safe.
When you look at the SEC, you've got a team like South Carolina as a 5 seed. I mean, they have an interesting resume, or even like a team like Florida as a 6 seed. How do you try to parse out maybe some of those SEC teams heading into the SEC tournament and the NCAA tournament as well?
Well, I think it helped South Carolina that they just beat Florida in a head-to-head game. And if you look at their resume metrics, South Carolina is 12th in strength of record, 18th in KPI. So a very, very good resume metric average for South Carolina. But it gets scary pretty fast when you look beyond that. They're 4-4 against Quadrant 1, just 1-4 against Quadrant 1A, those very top teams on the bracket. So what that tells you is, yes, they have a win at Tennessee, but in their other hardest games, they haven't performed. And more scary for them is they have a KenPom rating of 47th in the country and a net of 46th. South Carolina, of all the teams in the country, they are the team that I am most unsure of their seed. I think they could get the treatment 2022 Providence had, where their resume metrics were so nice that they ended up getting a good seed. Providence got a 4 seed that year before losing to Kansas. Kansas went on to win the national championship, as we all know. But South Carolina could also end up being similar to a 2021 Missouri, which got a 9 seed, or a 2023 Missouri from last year, which got a 7 seed. They did not have good efficiency metrics, even though they had some really good wins. I think South Carolina could be a 5 seed. They could be a 7 or an 8 seed. Wouldn't surprise me either way. I think Florida is a little bit easier to determine where they should be. They're 19th in strength of record, and they're 24th in both of the efficiency metrics that the committee looks at. So I think they're pretty clearly around that 6 seed line. But South Carolina has a huge variance on where they could be, and it's just going to come down to those discussions in the committee room. Is the committee going to say, hey, they won at Tennessee, they have a really great resume metrics, they deserve a high seed? Or are they going to say, guys, this team isn't good enough to be there? Look at their efficiency metrics. Look at the way they lost by 40 to Auburn. We're going to have to see with South Carolina. Don't be surprised if they're a 5, 6, 7, or 8 seed. They could be all over the place.
I'm also curious about BYU. You look at them, they have the win out on the road against Kansas down Fieldhouse. They had a really close game against Houston and Provo. They had another really close game against Iowa State that they lost in Ames. You got them as a 5 seed right now. Do you feel like they're in that area, or what do you think could happen with BYU as well?
Well, you know, BYU's only 9-9 against quadrants 1 and 2, and they played 9 games in quadrant 4. So they actually don't have as nice of a record against the first three quadrants as you'd expect. They're only 12-9 overall against quads 1-3. To give you a comparison, Kansas is sitting there at 17-8. So you start to see these big differences pop up pretty quickly with BYU. I feel pretty strongly that they're either a 4 or a 5 seed right now, but I lean towards that 5. That's where I have them at just 6-6 against quadrant 1. They haven't added that marquee win the same way that you might expect, and you'd say, well, they won at Kansas, but they won at Kansas without Kevin McCullough, and I think the committee is going to think about that. When they got that huge win, it really, I think pretty much everybody agrees, that doesn't happen if Kevin McCullough plays. So I think BYU is going to get some credit from the committee, enough to put them up to that 5 line. But I really don't see them getting up to a 3 or a 2 seed, despite having some really good efficiency metrics and some really overall pretty strong wins, because they just haven't done enough overall to be any higher. So I feel pretty good about BYU at a 5 seed and possibly getting up to a 4.
You had mentioned there with Kevin McCullough, the situation for KU. There was even been some discussion about KU possibly maybe resting him in the Big 12 tournament, whereas if they were to not play him and KU was to lose early, do you get the sense that would still maybe be held against KU if they went out and they lost early in the Big 12 tournament without Kevin McCullough? Or would they, I guess, for lack of a better term, maybe kind of get a pass on that in the Big 12 tournament?
I think it would really come down to what the committee believes. If Kevin McCullough plays against Houston and then they rest him for the Big 12 tournament, you know, maybe they announce it now. If they were to announce it before the Houston game, like, hey, our plan is to rest him for the Big 12 tournament because we want him fresh for the NCAA tournament, I think the committee would probably give Kansas a break for what happens at the Big 12 tournament. But if they play him this weekend, don't announce anything, and then all of a sudden he's not there for the Big 12 tournament, and Kansas says, don't worry, it's just a precautionary thing, we're holding him out for the Big 12 tournament, I don't know that the committee is going to believe that. I think the committee might look at that and say, well, you know, I don't know. No, the last time that when you guys announced this, that was after the last time he played. If they were to announce it before the Houston game that he is going to play against Houston but not play in the Big 12 tournament, I do think the committee would give them a break. But there's a point where the committee might be saying, hey, Kansas, we don't know that we can take you at your word here because we just haven't seen that proof. So I think that's a really interesting scenario, and I do think the health of Kevin McCullough will be something that the committee seriously evaluates.
Yeah, that is interesting, because I don't know that Kansas would do that, would come out and say one way or the other if they are going to rest him. But I guess to your point, I mean, if it were to potentially, I guess in a weird way, positively impact them potentially in the NCAA tournament, that would be something that I think you'd have to consider at that point. But kind of as this bracket comes into shape a little bit more, as we get closer to the actual selection show and whatnot, you start to think about, you know, picking your teams, picking your brackets. Are there any teams right now that you're circling as, hey, if they're, you know, an 11, 12, 13 seed, I think this is a team that could make the second weekend or do an upset? Anybody that's jumping out to you already right now?
Yeah, I know we've talked about Indiana State before. I still think they're a fantastic selection if they make the tournament, but kind of a little bit further down the bracket. A team that might end up being a 13 or a 14 seed if they win their conference tournament is High Point. I think they've got some terrific guard play. I would really be on the lookout for High Point as a major surprise in the NCAA tournament. A team that, frankly, I think a lot of America's never even heard of High Point, but they're good. And I think they could be a team that you want to circle as a potential surprise team.
Well, there you go. You heard it here first. High Point, maybe a team to keep an eye on in the NCAA tournament. He is Graham Dorn of Graham Dorn Bracketology. And, of course, Graham, excited to have you back on next week, hopefully, as we get closer and closer to the NCAA tournament reveal as well. But appreciate your time as always, Graham. Thanks so much, and enjoy your weekend, man.
Thank you. You too, Nick.
All right, that was Graham Dorn from Graham Dorn Bracketology. Be sure to check out all of his work at Graham Dorn on social media. Check him out on social media. He just put out his new bracket today that we just spent some time talking about there as we get closer and closer to the NCAA tournament. 1 hour down here on the show, about an hour and 15 minutes to go. We're going to be out a little bit early at 5:15 for coverage of KU women's basketball. Got some audio coming up in the 4 o'clock hour and more. You're listening to RCST on FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Depend on it.
Hey, it's Nick Springer from Rock Chalk Sports Talk on KLWN. And despite sitting in a studio all day, my body feels great thanks to Massage Envy. Their total body stretch services can help you stay loose and limber
and clear your mind and help your body. Their total body stretch services are completely customizable. All you have to do is sit back, relax, and breathe deep while they help you through the guided stretches. So if you've been dealing with aches and pains, be sure to check out Massage Envy on 6th Street in Lawrence and 119th and Black Bob in Olathe.
Four o'clock hour here on Rock Chalk Sports Talk. You're listening on FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. I'm Nick Springer. Coming up tonight, we are out early at 5:15 for pregame coverage of KU on the women's side for women's basketball in the Big 12 tournament against BYU. Tip off at 5:30. Coming up later on this hour, we'll have a chance to hear from both Brandon Schneider and Bill Self, the two respective head coaches for the women's and men's teams, ahead of the games this weekend for the women on the women's side in the Big 12 tournament and for KU wrapping up their regular season against Houston. And we'll have our KU game picks for the KU-Houston game coming up in the 5 o'clock hour before we get out for KU women's basketball coverage. So wanted to dive a little bit deeper into this pregame, into this game against BYU for Kansas. KU taking on the Cougars in the what is technically the second round of the Big 12 tournament coming up this afternoon. And this is a BYU team that KU beat twice in the regular season. They beat them in Lawrence back on February 17th. Or they beat them in Lawrence, excuse me, back on January 31st. They beat them in Provo on February 17th. In Lawrence, it was 67-53. Kansas got the win. And in Provo, they won 70-62 over BYU. And in Allen Fieldhouse, when they first played in Lawrence, it was Tyana Jackson who absolutely dominated the game with 25 points and 22 rebounds for Kansas. And in the second game, it was Sakaya Franklin who had a big game for KU, 24 points. Holly Kerskeeter had 19, and Yvette Mayberry had 16. And Brandon Schneider talked about this a little bit, about the fact that, you know, that last game against BYU that KU played on the road was a really good example of, when you look at this Kansas team, so much of this team seems to be relying on both Tyana Jackson and Samaya Nichols, really. Tyana Jackson as sort of that force inside that can be so dominant, and then Tyana Nichols as sort of the electric freshman that can make plays and drive to the basket and do all that stuff. And, of course, Samaya Nichols coming off a career high against Oklahoma to end the regular season. So those two players really kind of the driving forces for Kansas. Well, in their last game in Provo, it was not those two. In fact, Samaya Nichols said it herself that that was one of her worst games of the season in Provo, and Tyana Jackson also struggled in that game. Samaya Nichols had just 5 points on 2 of 7 shooting. Tyana Jackson was in foul trouble for a good majority of the game. She just had 2 points with 4 rebounds and 4 fouls in the game. And it was Lauren Gustin for BYU, who was, by the way, unanimous first team all Big 12 selection for BYU, had 33 points and 18 rebounds for the Cougars in that game in Provo. And that's going to be the matchup to watch. It's certainly going to be Gustin versus Tyana Jackson. And Tyana Jackson kind of touched on that when we heard her audio earlier in the show, which was the key will be staying out of foul trouble, right? Is playing aggressive, but also staying out of foul trouble for her. Because if Tyana Jackson's not able to stay on the floor, then you could have a game like you had in Provo where it could be Lauren Gustin really kind of taking over, because she is a really, really outstanding player for BYU. Like I said, unanimous first-team all-conference player for BYU, and has been really strong all season long for the Cougars. This is a BYU team. They finished 10th. Obviously, they're in the 7-10 matchup in the Big 12. They finished the season, though, at 16-15, right? So this is not a team that's going to be looking to make the NCAA tournament, whereas for Kansas, at this point, even if they were to lose to BYU, I think KU probably still is in the NCAA tournament. But obviously, it's not 100% guarantee, right, for Kansas. I mean, they were hovering around the first four out for a while. Then they were in the play-in games, really, in that last four in. Right now, ESPN's latest bracketology has Kansas firmly in the tournament as a 9 seed. I shouldn't say firmly in the tournament, but in the tournament as a 9 seed. And not even on their list of last four byes. So Kansas really in a good spot overall. And again, I don't know that a loss to BYU would knock them out, but certainly if you're KU, you win this game if you're KU, and then you go play Texas tomorrow. If you win this game for KU, I think it'd certainly be in, because Texas is a team that even if you lose to them, that's not going to be held against you. I mean, Texas is firmly in the tournament as a two seed right now in the NCAA tournament. So losing to Texas would certainly not negatively impact you that much if you're KU. So again, feels like they're probably in the tournament anyways, even if they were to lose to BYU, but you'd love to get a win and then feel like, okay, definitely in the tournament now if you're Kansas. And again, I think this is a KU team that just get there, right? Just get to the tournament. And I think they have a good chance possibly to try to make a run. Obviously, if you're an 8 or a 9 seed for Kansas, that would mean that you'd probably have to be taking on a 1 seed in the second round, which right now they are in the ESPN's women's bracketology has them in the Albany region with Ohio State as the 1 seed. And Ohio State, they just got blasted by Maryland, lost by 20 to Maryland. So I guess of the 1 seeds, I mean, if you're going to be an 8-9 team and you're going to draw a 1 seed in the second round, whether it's, you know, you don't want South Carolina, you don't want Stanford, you don't want UCLA, okay, Ohio State seems like maybe that could be a beatable 1 seed possibly for Kansas. So, but like I said, they got to get through the BYU women first and then go from there. And again, Lauren Gustin is the player to watch for BYU. She's been outstanding. She is averaging 15.5 rebounds per game for BYU. And scoring-wise, she's averaging 17 points per game. She is really the driving force for them and has been really, really good all season and is a force to be reckoned with that KU will have to deal with. And again, if it's Tyana Jackson, hopefully she can stay healthy and be kind of that player for KU to sort of stem the tide there. But again, I think this is a Kansas team that with Tyana Jackson and Samaya Nichols kind of leading the way, and then you just expect that one of Yvette Mayberry, Holly Kerr-Skeeter, Zakiya Franklin is going to do enough as well. This is a Kansas team that kind of talked about throughout the season, similar spot that they've been into the men's team in that they haven't really had much from the bench. But now getting to the NCAA tournament, that maybe won't matter as much if you are able to rely more on your starters as it is, if you have more time in the NCAA tournament. So that's certainly something to watch as well in this game for KU. And when you look at the bracket, the run that KU would have to make, they beat BYU today. They would be playing Texas tomorrow, who is the 2 seed. You win that game and advance to the semifinals, which are on Monday. So they would play today and tomorrow, and then no game on Sunday, nothing on Sunday, advance to Monday. And on Monday, you could potentially play more than likely Kansas State from that bottom end, which that would be a fun third time around against Kansas State, who's the 3 seed. Because when you look at that side of the bracket, so Kansas State's going to be playing the winner of Cincinnati and West Virginia. West Virginia did beat KU earlier in the year in Allen Fieldhouse, actually, at the start of conference play. They are the 6 seed. So I don't know. That could be an interesting rematch for KU, and then, but probably going to get Kansas State. And then if you were to make the championship game, who knows? I mean, Iowa State's been pretty strong on the women's side. Oklahoma's the number 1 overall seed, but I think they feel pretty beatable, really, if you ask me. But I don't know. So that's kind of the run that KU would have to make on their side. Get through BYU, Texas, and then probably Kansas State in the semifinal. And then who knows who would come out of that other side of the bracket to possibly face them in the final. And again, the schedule is today at 5:30, tomorrow at 5:30, again, if KU is able to win today, and then the semifinals on Monday, the championship on Tuesday on the women's side before they scoot out of the way for the men's side, which, of course, will be starting next week on Wednesday. So we'll see what Kansas can do tonight against BYU. Again, we're going to be scooting out of the way early here on Rock Chalk Sports Talk to get you coverage of the KU women pregame at 5:15 for a 5:30 tip-off between KU and BYU right here on KLWN. Had a chance to hear from Brandon Schneider on Wednesday leading up to this matchup against BYU. We're going to get to that audio coming up on the other side. We'll take a timeout. You're listening to Rock Chalk Sports Talk on FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Depend on it. O'clock hour here on Rock Chalk Sports Talk. You're listening on FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. I say 5 o'clock hour, but it's 5 o'clock 10 minutes, basically, here as we're going to be out for coverage of the KU women's basketball team coming up with the Big 12 tournament at 5:15, with pregame coverage starting at 5:15 for the tip-off of KU and BYU coming up at 5:30 right here on KLWN. So that gives us just enough time here to get to our KU game picks for this weekend for Kansas against Houston. Now, unfortunately, as of right now, the line officially, I just checked a few minutes ago on DraftKings and it was not up, but there it is now. The official line on DraftKings for KU on the road against Houston is Kansas plus 8.5 with the over-under total set at 136 for the game. So KU 8.5-point favorites against Houston on the road. And I was going to, prior to the line coming out, I was going to look to KenPom. KenPom has this as a 10-point game. So it seems like maybe a little bit of extra, more respect being given to Kansas for the line here at plus 8.5 for KU. And listen, KU wins by 13 at home against Houston earlier in the season, but KU's been a different team on the road, as we've seen. So plus 8.5 seems probably pretty reasonable. And as you know, I have a hard time picking against Kansas when the line is like that. When you look at this game, for Kansas, it'll just come down to how they can execute on offense, right? Can they be efficient with passing? Can they be efficient with passing and cutting the same way they were in that win against Houston previously? Because that was where the big difference. They were getting a lot of easy shots at the rim. And, you know, I talked about this a bit with Kansas going into that game against Houston is when you are elite at something, like the elite of the elite, you know, Houston, even with that Kansas game, their defensive metrics are the best we've seen in 20-plus years. When you are so good, so elite at something, you gain this aura of invincibility where you just think it's impossible for anybody to possibly even scratch you at all, right? How do you respond when that gets chinked a little bit, when maybe a team is able to score on you? And listen, honestly, Houston didn't respond very well. KU kept getting easy baskets against them and was able to build up a big enough lead that they were able to win going away in the second half against Houston. So same deal here. The start of this game, I think, will probably be the most critical for Kansas, right? If you can start pretty strong and maybe get some buckets early on this Houston defense and make them kind of maybe second-guess themselves a little bit on the defensive end, that would go a long way for KU in this game, I think. So starting quick will be a big factor. And I think you want to get the ball to Hunter Dickinson. You know, I mentioned this Houston team, in terms of vertical height, they're not particularly big. They have great length, though, and great athleticism. But if you can get the ball to Hunter Dickinson, and he should be able to have an opportunity to see the floor pretty well. And I talked about this after the K-State game. With Hunter Dickinson, I continue to believe now that it's going to be not so much his scoring, but everything else that he does that might be the difference for KU down the stretch here. So this would be a game where maybe he could utilize his passing more, get him the ball, and allow him to create a little bit. And then obviously Kevin McCullough's status will be something to keep an eye on as well. That's one of the reasons why I assumed that DraftKings didn't quite have the lineup, and right now they don't have any player props at all, probably because of the fact that Kevin McCullough's status, while he seems to be playing, I guess it's not a guarantee, right? It's not a guarantee until you know for sure. But that it remains to be a big factor of this, obviously, is Kevin McCullough's status. And Bill Self talked about a little bit that yesterday that you know, with Kevin, there's also the question of, okay, play him here, or do you rest him for the Big 12 tournament? What does that mean? And so there is a lot to sort of just try to parse out, basically, with that situation. So that'll be something to keep an eye on. Certainly you need Kevin McCullough to be pretty healthy and play at a probably decently high level to win this game if you're Kansas. I don't really see a scenario where KU can win without Kevin McCullough playing at a decently high level and playing a high volume of minutes. I mean, unless Marco Jackson and Nick Timberlake just elevate to a level we haven't seen yet this season, that seems unlikely. So you're going to need Kevin McCullough. I think Hunter Dickinson needs to be a big factor, like I said. Certainly as a scorer, you expect him to score, but maybe even more as a passer in a game like this. And I look to see KU making some cuts to the rim. That was where they had a lot of success. You know, Johnny Furphy hit some threes in the game, but he also did a great job of cutting. Same thing with Kevin McCullough, and that was what allowed them to be so efficient at the rim. But now we've seen Kansas in some games this season be struggle at the rim. Can't have that happen. I mean, this is a game where you cannot afford to miss easy shots when they're given to you, because guess what? Against a Houston team, you ain't going to get very many easy shots as it is. So Kansas will have to be prepared for that, certainly, in a game like this against Houston. So KU plus 8.5 is the line, and as you know, I'm going to pick Kansas. Of course I am. Kansas plus 8.5. I'll take KU. I don't know that KU wins this game, but it's Kansas. They're going to play up to level their opponent, I think, and they'll be ready for this atmosphere, I think, and should be able to keep this as a closer game. I mean, it's easy to make the argument that Houston could run away with this. I mean, we've seen games like that for Kansas on the road. You go back to, like, the Texas Tech game. But listen, against Iowa State, KU was right there. Against Kansas State, KU was right there. Against Baylor, even, KU cut it to 3, or cut it to 4, actually, with about, 90 seconds left in the game. So I trust that Kansas is going to fight in this game, and I think we'll cover the 8.5. I'll take KU plus 8.5. You know, I took Kansas against Kansas State. That hit, obviously, because K-State stinks. But I'll go with KU here. The over-under, by the way, is 136. And I mentioned this in Houston's win streak, part of these 8 games, they've given up less than 65 points in 6 of them. 65 points or less in 6 of those 8 games that they've won on the streak. So for that reason, I'm going to take the over at 136, because that means I think if Kansas is going to win, they're going to have to probably score more than 65 points. So I'll take the over 136. KU plus 8.5 and Houston against Houston, and over 136 are my KU game picks. So, and in case you're wondering, I have picked against Kansas before. It just doesn't happen very often. And normally when I pick against Kansas, it actually works for Kansas. Maybe I should be picking Houston. But then again, I picked Baylor, and Baylor covered. So who knows? I don't know. I don't know. Maybe it's all blind. Or maybe the most logical thing is that me picking games randomly in a studio doesn't mean anything. But I don't want to destroy that mirage. You know, I want people to think that my picks matter. So those are my picks. KU plus 8.5, over 136 for KU and Houston. No prop bets up for this game. No player bets up for this game. Again, presumably probably because of the fact that Kevin McCullough's status, while it seems like he's going to play, it's not, I guess, a guarantee really. So nothing up there for this game against Houston right now for Kansas. And, of course, you'll be able to hear that game right here on KLWN tomorrow afternoon. 1:30 pregame for a 3 o'clock tip down in Houston, with the Jayhawks wrapping up their 2023-24 regular season on the road before the Big 12 tournament comes up next week, and then, of course, the NCAA tournament coming up after that. And, of course, you'll be able to hear all coverage of KU men's basketball as long as they make it in the Big 12 tournament and the NCAA tournaments right here on KLWN. You'll also be able to hear all coverage of the KU women's team as far as they go in the Big 12 tournament and the NCAA tournaments as well. Speaking of that, coming up next year, we'll be switching over to coverage of the KU women right here on KLWN. That's it for RCST today and this week. Thanks so much to Graham Doran from Graham Doran Bracketology for joining the show earlier today. And, of course, thanks so much to you, as always, for listening to another edition of Rock Chalk Sports Talk. We'll be back on Monday to break down all things KU on the men's basketball side, on the women's basketball side, and more. Thanks so much for listening. This is RCST on FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. KU women's basketball next. See ya.
Well, that's it here on the podcast side, here on the Best of RCST podcast. Thanks so much for listening in. And, of course, if you do want to hear the full show, you can listen every day, 3 to 6, Monday through Friday, for Rock Chalk Sports Talk, your only daily KU-centric sports radio show that you'll find every day from 3 to 6 on KLWN. Be sure to leave us a 5-star rating and review if you're listening on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify. Thanks so much for listening to the Best of RCST podcast presented by Massage Envy. You can also find us on kusports.com as well. Be sure to check out the live show every day from 3 to 6 on KLWN. Thanks for listening.